All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 podcast. A hot licks, Jay. How's it going?
Woo.
Burning up, baby.
Burning up, Steve.
It's a sizzler.
The whole country's burning up, from what I understand,
I'm
right?
I'm burning for you.
Burning for you.
Actually, if you hear noise in the background, ladies and gentlemen, it is... It's the first time I cannot do the podcast without the air running in here today. It's so hot.
Me too.
It's too hot. So if you hear a little bit of the noise floor there, I apologize, but I ain't sweating for you this week. So it's just out of nowhere. Finally, I mean, it's a little bit more normal for here where I'm at, right? That's not the most shocking thing. But you said you got, what, 90-something there in the Northwoods, Jay?
Yeah, it was 90 with high humidity. Yeah, it was really hot yesterday, too. It's like,
Lord. You're not built for that.
Nope, not used to that.
That's not what... you're a hardy people up there, but you're not really temperature tolerant.
Not on the high end of the spectrum, right?
It's 80. What? I mean, that's what I think.
Oh, it's 2 out today. Ain't too bad.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, winter, yeah, you know. You'd be suffering, but yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, even on my end of things, it was so nice until middle of last week for me, it was like, okay, now it's hot, right? I haven't acclimated, I'm sure I've said it before, but I'm just kind of like, ugh. You know, mm-hmm. No, didn't acclimate at all. And then it's like, welcome to hell. Standing in the parking lot and your shoes are melting in the asphalt at the ramp, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I freaking
good times.
And again, fair warning, right? Fair warning. If you leave a bait that is a ABS plastic bait on the deck of your boat in this heat. I have learned this lesson. Let me put it this way. I have been taught this lesson hundreds of times. I have never learned from it. So just a warning. If you go, and now the other thing is this, Jay, one of my favorite things we'll get, you know, at the Muskie shop on occasion, you'll get a return or Livingston gets a return. He's like, my bait's warped. There's something wrong with it. It is a telltale sign, is it not? You know exactly what it looks like when a bait does that. It's all ripply. That is from leaving them in the heat. If your bait gets ripply or it blows up. I did it, and I was so mad at myself. Jay, I made a baby shallow raider look exactly like a slammer fatty minnow, if you know what I mean. That thing just blew up like a bloviated cow. So be careful with your pricey baits in the heat, especially you guys up north. You know, you're not used to it. You're out there. Oh, I could take my toboggan off. So be aware of that. You get the direct bright sun, and it will cook your gear. Anyway, other than that, to explain something here, yet another explanation. Had no clue this was going to happen, right? Because if you remember, we try to avoid the real world. But we went through the little thing there. I was telling you, hey, get your gear, all this stuff with the little bit of the trade war we had there. And prices were up, prices are down, prices are everywhere. We all live through that, and we're still dealing with the ramifications thereof. However,
yeah, right.
You know, we're on the backside of it, apparently. We'll see. But... What happened is it when things kick back in, a bait I've been working on for a hot minute, right, got pushed to the front of the line here because a lot of other manufacturing jobs were pulled, you know, a lot of other companies, stuff like that, where your facilities that produce stuff. So we threw the listing up. I was shocked. I got the phone call. I was like, oh, well, Livingston had them in the hopper, if you will. And they are on a boat now, which is the Mustang. So it's a little fast behind things. And I don't want you to feel like, oh, he just swim baited us, right? So the explanation, where we haven't had a lot of time to explain, here's the setup, right? You have the Magnus, which is your 10-inch big boy. That is a big flat-sided profile, your bigger profile. Then you have the smaller profile, the shorter tail, right? So you have your panfish size. This thing, if you check it out, go to the Musky Shop website. It is called the Mustang, right? And so it's in the same family as your Magnus, but it's a different. It is an all-plastic bait, right? And you're going, well, why is it all plastic? All soft plastic. It is 7 inches. So this is a whole different animal. Yeah. This is your downsize. You've got your downsize Magnus, which is your panfish profile. This is your gentleman's bait. This is, and I'll say it, whatever. Put it up against a swimming dog. Put it up against a Poseidon of the same size and let your eyes do the talking. Okay, and check it out. So Jay did a short on the Musky Shop channel, but again, this was supposed to be a next year thing. But I'm excited as hell that it's ready. I mean, I have crushed on this bait, and what always happens when I get a bait in the hopper, I get to crush on it for a while. Well, I've only got half the time to crush on it before you guys are going to get it, and everything's ready to go on it. Now, you go, okay, you have your Magnus, which is half hard, half soft, because the big swim baits are expensive. This is the cheapest musky swim bait that's all rubber there is. And it will last multiple fish, right? There you have
it. Yeah, I think we're talking $21.99, $22.99,
which is highway robbery at this point as far as cheap. Highway givery. It's not robbery, it's givery, Jay.
That's not a word, but yeah.
I made it up. It is now.
Did you tell everybody that I threw it yesterday when I was testing baits?
Not yet, but I guess we're going to.
JJ Likey.
Me like. Thank you. That's, folks, that's the JSE report. JJ Likey. So if you would like.
That's all I'm going to say.
If you would like. Yeah, if you'd like to base your fishing experience on a man child's take, JJ Likey, JJ No Likey. Right? Is that how this works?
Now, it's very accurate, Steve.
What did you like? What did you threw? You like? Yes.
Yeah, well, Tom and I got out. We did that, you know, underwater stuff with it the other day, and I, you know, ran it once by in slow motion. And it's just like, yeah, it's actually pretty violent. You know, you can feel it. The whole body rocks left and right, and it's got a oversized paddle tail. So slow to moderate retrieve. It's beautiful. You know, every once in a while, give it a stop when you're reeling in, and
there you got it.
So there you go. I mean, it doesn't get any easier than that, and it figure eights very nicely too.
Thank you. So
that's important.
The deal on this bait, if you check it out, you'll notice it's round belly, right? So kind of like if you have your Jake and your grandma, the differences. I'm trying to explain. Obviously, there's a size difference, right? So you have 10, you got 8, and you got this, but the overall, the vertical size. This is a much smaller bait, right? This is not the Magnus. This is a much smaller bait. However, the paddle tail on this thing for its size, so most of your small swim baits are 8 inches. This has a far bigger paddle tail than any of the competing baits in that 7-8 inch range, right? But it's round belly and actually has side fins. And you look at the side fins, design wise, this causes a very, very, very pronounced roll, right? So if you like the Magnus, you see the Magnus, or you've thrown the Magnus, you go, holy crap, that's got a lot of roll. This thing is just roll city. So as a primary approach, or as a cast back, as a, you know, if you're fishing water where they don't like big baits, this is what it's made for, right? This is kind of your crossover. Obviously, these are going to be out because with Livingston, I do all the stuff in Europe. So these are, you know, designed with that moderate size in mind. You can throw it all day. It's low impact. But, excuse me, Herbeck smashed on it. Herbeck got his sample this week. This is how fast this came, Jay.
Herbeck, yeah, you totally heard of the
hadn't
story.
Seen
yeah.
him. Nobody knew. And right. he got a couple really nice ones already. Jaybird's only other one with one. But I'm stoked about them. Check them out because, again, the price is right and the durability. That's the other thing because, like, I'm not big on baits to tear up. And my prototypes that I had, I only had white ones. And so I only had 3 white, like not even like the white you see on there, just like plain. There's nothing to them. And I was able to fish 3 of them with clients for the last, realistically, 4 months. And they've all caught multiple fish. So the plastic is a different animal here. It's not going to tear up like your standard stuff.
Yet it's right? soft, and it's got a lot of movement.
But it's got, mm-hmm. you can pull on him like Stretch Armstrong. And I've already heard from guys, too, with like mm-hmm. their Magnuses. A lot of people are shocked how well that plastic's holding up on the Magnus, right? And that is part of the game. We actually spent a lot of time on that material. So you can get that stretch and that pull, right, without it tearing up. So that's it. Check it out. It's the Mustang. There's a couple cool, I will say this, I'm just prattling on about it. There's a couple cool colors that we are going to have at the Muskie Shop that are very Eurocentric, but look awesome, which is the Swamp Thing and the Burnt Roach, because you have Roach, which is a game fish, a forage fish in Europe. So you want mm-hmm. roachy colors, but it turned out cool. It's like it's very similar. You'll see people call it like a dirty penny. Like I've seen baits, like they call them dirty penny or stuff like that. But that bait, I've fished the color samples and it's a really cool offset too for your walleye stuff. But check them out, whatever. I just throw it. That's all I'll say. Just throw it once. It's all it's going to take for your smaller stuff. Right,
you can sign up on the website for a notification and by email, because we're expecting these maybe as early as what, August 1st, maybe
something. It's
something like that.
It's
faster than
expected. Okay. But yeah, I'm stoked about it. They look cool. And then you got Crappy. Yeah. But check them out. We'll shoot some stuff on it. Jay did the short. I'll get some. We'll get like a on the water, you know, so you can actually see it. But the best thing I can tell you is check out Jay's short, because you're seeing it in his hands. And I think that's important, right? When you see a bait where you can actually see, I think that's
reference.
One. Yeah, it's one reference sure. of, you know, it's like, hey, how big is this bait actually? So it's a different animal.
And you don't need heavy equipment for it. And you throw it with your bucktail rod. I think it's 3.4 ounces, something like that. You know,
throw it on a bucktail rod. Perfect. You can throw it in the trash, whatever you want to do with it. Check it out.
No, you want to throw it in the trash.
Throw it in the trash.
No.
No, throw it in the lake.
It's too good.
And you get the fish, and the fish goes, yeah, I want that. Good God. I think I have sun poisoning, Jay. Anyway, on that tip, one thing I was going to say, you know, definitely with this heat, I'm not trying to be preachy, but you Southern folks start watching out for that dreaded 80s, right? It is the season. We're definitely there. We got really lucky this year thus far. You know, we had a good run, boys, right? Had a good run. Be paying attention to water temps now. Be thinking conservation so you have some fish to catch in the fall. Right, it is upon us. It is here. So, you know, it's okay. Don't let anybody see you fishing for bass. But you know, maybe if you go out, you might have to fish for bass. Right, just don't tell anybody. But just a heads up there. Be thinking about that. Anyway, the big news, breaking news. It's muskie season in Canada finally. So Jay, I figure what I'd do.
Yeah. I thought you were gonna. I thought you had like a follow up on the scare clown thing.
Clown, no. We actually, I have plans here in a few weeks when I'm visiting up north. But I got the bash. If there wasn't more going on here, folks. Good God!
Yeah, I know, right?
I've been getting ready for the rig all day. That's the way I feel. Of course, I run at 1,000 miles an hour all day long, every day. But it's exceptional this week. You got so much going on. So. Jay brought up scare clown, right? I'm hoping that we can at least shoot the trailer for Scare Clown 2, The Summoning, with neighbor Steve. So if neighbor Steve Johnson, if you're listening, I will buy the stuff off Amazon if you're willing to play the scare clown, right? So if you imagine, we will shoot this crappy trailer for you all. In the garage. Yeah,
it's got to be neighbor Steve. I mean, he fits the part.
Can you imagine? He just, well, anyway, moving on. The other thing.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Because, you know, you got all this stuff going on. Talking to Danny, I talked to Joe Cooper, and it's one thing. Don't do much promo for other stuff, but Livingston, just to help some of the Canadian stuff because the shipping's getting so bad. Joe Cooper, who does the little musky report there with the Danny, right? said, hey, some of the Canadians could use some stuff. So there is a code right now for Livingston, which is HOSER15, Jay.
HOSER15.
Yeah, all okay. caps. So that'll get you 15% off at Livingston for you Canadians.
That's a Canadian shipping only code? Yeah.
I don't know. Nice. I haven't tried it. It's real.
Go home, Hoser. What they? Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
You can get 15% off with that on the LivingstonLures.com, which is okay. It's funny. That's what I brought it up. So HOSER15. Anyway, good God.
Let's what will talk they think to, of next?
Think of talking to Danny.
Has been changed.
Danny! What are you doing, buddy?
Well, I am currently just got done a birthday celebration for myself. I turned 39 years old today, and
It is pouring rain. Well, you didn't tell me before it was your birthday. Did you get anything for your birthday?
No, I didn't even get a big muskie today for my birthday.
Man. Well, it what's going on? I know everybody was excited. Everybody's fired up. How was Eagle looking? What's the report Eagle, from Canada?
Eagle is a little bit further along than I kind of anticipated. I mean, for opening week, the muskies are doing what muskies should be doing, even, you know, a little bit more progressed than what I had thought. They're out on the main lake. The rock bite has been kind of the deal here. It's just we've had a little bit of weird weather here the last couple days, you know, some storms blowing through and some, you know, volatile type stuff. So it seems like, you know, the rock fish are, the deeper fish are a little bit more predictable, but there are fish in the weeds, but the rock fish seem to kind of be where you need to be focusing right now.
What's the weed growth like out there? Is it behind? Is it typical? Is it?
I would say it's about normal. Nothing is topped out. Nothing is topped out yet. Mm-hmm. You know, the weeds are 3-4 feet high right now at this point. Now I would forecast, you know, after this front that we have today and kind of tomorrow blows through and the weather kind of stabilizes towards the end of the week, I would personally see the fish to kind of make their move back, you know, into the weeds. I see the weed bite being stronger than the rock bite once the weather stabilizes. Solely because the amount of walleyes in the weeds versus the rocks right now. We're right on the cusp of the mayfly hatch, and all the walleyes are primarily in the, you know, the weeds, cabbage weeds or sand grass that's growing. You know, a lot of people overlook that type of bite, especially the sand grass bite for muskies. When I'm talking sand grass, it's like I don't know a better way to really describe it other than like stringy, a little pubic hair weed. Yeah, it's like a little kind of pube hair weed that grows about 6 inches tall on the bottom.
There's a lot of things you could have said. A small cat hair, you know. It's like a dog. It's that slime grass. But you went straight for the pube. I commend you, sir.
You know, a lot of fish use it this time of year, especially the walleyes, and the muskies will get in there right around it. And I'm not afraid to cast it for muskies. You can fish it. The nice thing about it is you can fish it really fast and cover a lot of water really quick, because when the muskies are using it, they're basically kind of, you know, open water, if you want to call it. They're in open water, but they're relating to this, you know, short grass. And if you get within 15, 20 feet of them, they're coming type deal, right? It's not like when they're buried in the cabbage where I feel like you got to hit them right over the head for them to kind of chase the bait a lot of times.
Yeah, there's not as much of a that sand grass really doesn't dampen vibration and doesn't cut down the visual. So, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's kind of like crazy weather down here. I actually talked to your dad earlier about some Livingston stuff, and it was hotter than hell is what he said in Wisconsin. I mean, what's your air temps? Are you getting all the moisture pushed?
Today, today was cold. You know, I had a high of, I don't even know, 62, 64 degrees.
Yeah.
And it's kind of forecasted to be like around that for the next couple of days. And then, you know, midweek, it's going to start to kind of trend back warmer again. But we're looking at, you know, 70 degree stuff. Nothing too wild and crazy or unbearable.
Yeah, it's weird. I mean, it's just like the heat just came out of nowhere, you know, for Midwest and definitely the South, because we're behind there. What I mean, you're seeing a lot of walleyes in the weeds. You're seeing some sandgrass stuff. I mean, you're positive, because it's always the great debate when things are opening. You would bet the boat, so to speak, that the spawn is done. There's none of that hangover or anything like that, correct? They're just
no. This year for muskies, I mean, it's just the way the kind of the weather and everything played out. They are well progressed. I would say they're two and a half weeks post spawn. I would even go as far, I mean, as you know, the open water thing. There's always going to be some fish out there to chase, but it's not going to be kind of a major playing factor as, you know, a structure type bite, what would be going on today, right now. But yeah, I mean, I poked around and, you know, stuff out on the main lake, and there was fish out on main lake rocks already. So, you could kind of fish a little bit of everything from way back in the bays. I'm sure there's still some fish lingering around in there, all the way out to the main middle part of the lake, and you're going to encounter fish there. So they are widespread, and they're doing musky things right now, if you want to call it that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's not, you're not having to come to Canada and play with your bass tackle. Yeah, it's actually musky baits. Well, good deal, man. Well, yeah. I know you've got to go blow some candles, or what is it you do for? Do you blow the blow out a beaver? What do you do? What do you do for Canadian? What do you do on your birthday out there? We blow out candles down here. What do you blow out?
Poutine? Yeah, I'm getting older now, so I just get one candle on my cake versus the actual number of candles 30, for my age. So,
39. But, I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Go
ahead.
I was just going to say, you got one more good year left. That's it. Everything.
You know what? Every year now, and like basically everything I do, like I'm noticing everything you have to do when you get older is you have to be more calculated and everything.
Yes.
Like you jump in the bed of your truck and you're like, oh, I'm just going to jump out and go. Well, you have to think about that stuff now, because you jump out of the back of your truck and you hit the ground, and next thing you know, you can't walk for 3 or 4 days. Like, I don't know. Getting old sucks.
Oh,
it really, really does.
I didn't even tell you, you've been so busy and I've been so busy. It's like I was getting my stuff together for my rig this year, right? And the trailer's just slightly higher, and it's like I have to do the step thing now, because I just can't do it. Like the thought of just flopping into the boat off the trailer tongue, you know what I'm saying? Because I'm trailering every day, and it's just like I'm going to fall out of this thing. There's no jumping around like a monkey anymore, you know? It's ridiculous. No. So everything hurts, Danny. And did you just now realize that existence is just eternal suffering, sir?
Everything hurts and nothing works.
Amen.
Basically, is what it boils down to.
Ain't that the truth? Well, enjoy the rest of your birthday, Danny Herbeck, 39 years old. That's his make-a-wish interview here, folks. Bake something, put it in a box, and mail it to Danny so it's rotten when it gets there. Anyway, Danny, I'll talk to you later, buddy. Be good.
All right, later, man.
What do you think, Jay? Should we mail Danny, maybe you save the dead suckers at the store this week and you mail them up as a token of your appreciation, possibly?
Yeah, we've got some bad beaver tails too. You know, we could probably put them on ice for a while and ship them up there and use the Hoser 15 code.
Hoser 15. Anyway, oh gosh, something else. It is ADD theater. We were talking about the Mustang earlier.
Yeah.
And remember, you know, we roll out the power panel. I'm sorry to talk about all this gear, folks, but it was a cool message I got this week. We rolled out the power paddle, right? So WM Bayou has the power paddle. A dude actually told me he was able to fix a couple of his torn up swim baits with power paddles, which I thought was awesome. He had he had a restless rider, and he had a swimming dog. And he's like, they were all torn up, and I literally bought power paddles and glued them together. Thanks. And I was like, that was kind of cool. It wasn't a question, but I thought that was just a neat idea. You know, I've seen a lot of people throw those on some different baits. Jay did something with a Titan the other day.
1,001 uses. Yeah, but I've run on a Titan, a Slammer 10-inch. I don't think anyone's seen that yet. That looks really cool, too. That Depth Raider one?
Yep.
Where it kicks?
It kicks. But I at least want to share that with people where you're going, oh, crap, you can repair. If you have a paddle tail like your Poseidon or something like that, you have a something that you can, instead of tearing up another paddle tail, because I mean if you have a torn up musky paddle tail, it's hard to get another paddle tail without tearing up a musky paddle tail. There you go. Nice. So it's floating out there in the ether. Anyway, one thing, another housekeeping thing from the Q&A's. I didn't even announce it on the show, so the Steve Stashes have gone out. I messaged those guys. My apologies. We'll do it one more time next week. I'll pick somebody. We've still got questions from this. But we'll do one more Steve Stash since Canada has opened up, right? So send them in this week. Let's hit a couple here, Jay. Let's see what we got. There's a lot. Let me look here.
Oh, while you're looking, Mark from the Netherlands says hi. Stopped in Friday.
Very nice.
Right? I don't know. I didn't tell you this, but the guy, you got to see his page, man. You should see the pike he's catching up there. Mm-hmm. And he fishes up where you guys went last year, 2 years ago. So anyway, he says hi. He's listened to every podcast episode.
Is he?
He was up musky fishing for 7 days, and
I actually met somebody when I was there last time, which I will be back again. That's another thing to bring up. Goodness, I can't even keep it straight, but I got a lot of stuff going on. But we'll be back. I think I'm going. Allegedly, what I have to do is go to like Brussels, Germany, and the Netherlands here shortly. So, got a lot of like. I don't think this is even the same guy, Jay, that was the podcaster last time that actually met me downtown.
No.
So, if you're over there, I will let it be known because there's a bunch of Netherlands folks that are listening. We could try to do something. Hey, meet at a pub. It's always cool or whatever, and talk pike. You know, you can't, it's hard to fly over for the bash or something like that. So, I will think of something or shoot me a message if that's something you want to do. Cause last time I was able to hook up with a couple people and say hello and talk baits and talk fish in there in person. So we could do that. Like I said, so it'd be Brussels and the Netherlands. Anyway, Matt, I'm originally from Wisconsin. Used to fish typical northern Wisconsin, Oneida County lakes and had some success. Moved to northern Minnesota and got used to catching dummy head pike. I recently moved to southern Ontario, and I'm on the southern end of Georgian Bay and back in the muskie game. But I've struggled to find fish. Obviously, this is very, very big water with lots of going on. Endless structure, clear water, big water, loads of boat traffic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Right? What are some tips about how to start down, how to break down where muskies will be, and how to pattern them on big, overwhelming water? Right? He's not going to be able to get out until the first week of July, you know, but we've got stuff in the 60s. Obviously, water temperatures are going to fluctuate. We hear them from Danny, you're up, you're down, you know, everything. That's just weather, that's just water. How do we break down big water? And that is big water, right? So, no expert on Georgian Bay, but what I can tell you, that structure is as important there as it is in a small creek, right? That is overarching. It is imperative that we familiarize ourselves and really hone in and get our pattern recognition skills heightened. So when we're looking and we're doing our map work, we at least are able to, how should I put this? We're able to identify the patterns and we're able to see past just the squiggles on the map, right? And it's just a scenario. I had a conversation on the boat this week, and it's difficult. It just is what it is. But some people can conceptualize things in their head and others can't, right? That's just the way we're all wired. And so, you know, it's not an intellect thing. It's just a skill thing. So I'm coming to realize that at some point there are some people that cannot look at a bathymetry map, the map of a lake, and conceptualize in three-dimensional space what that looks like. Right? It just is what it is. So, if you cannot conceptualize it, something I'd recommend is trying to... I mean, I'm spitballing this, but this is something, at least this is not directly towards that question, but if you're trying to figure out mapping and you're just like, you can't see it in your head, you're going to have to start drawing it out yourself in a way that you do. Like, okay, that might be a hill, or go and look at... And it's a tip I'm trying to come up with. And like I said, if you got a better way, tell me. How someone that can't visualize this stuff, how do you, if they can't conceptualize it, how do you convey it? You know, looking at lakes that are in a drawn down state, right? Or looking at...
Yeah, like you said, there's a hill there. That's exactly the way you should look at things.
And look at... Where I was going is look at topographical maps and go look at stuff. Right now, this is gonna sound nutty, but this is overarching. This isn't about Georgian Bay, but this is just overarching. So when I'm talking about structure, and I'll get messages from people where, not all the time, but just doesn't click. It doesn't mean you're out of the game. You're just going to have to readdress and refocus on how you're computing this information. Where, let's say you're looking at a lake and there is on the map a 10-foot hump, right? You might have to go out and find a public park with the reverse of it, or it's got the same rise, and look at a hill, right? Look at a topographical map, and you go, oh, so that's the difference, right? Oh, so that's a hill, and that's what a hump looks like, or that's a little mound. And so just throwing that out there. Right, so if it's something you're struggling with, where you really can't see it in your mind's eye when you're looking at your lake map, look at it. Get a topographical map and look at things above water, so you can conceptualize what that looks like. Because, you know, a mound of dirt, there's not a lot of things that are like bars, you know, that are on the surface, but you can see the rise of things. You know, you can look at the berm of a road, or, you know, you'll see where they'll move dirt to shore something up, and you go, okay, you can kind of get a concept of that and then transpose that subsurface. Just wanted to throw that out there, because there's a couple emails I got this week where I think people were struggling with that. But big water. If we're going to fish big water, we have to understand structure. You have to have that under your belt. That's why I'm saying this. So, does Matt, you know, the guy that asked, do you have structure under your belt? If you don't, you need to, because everything else is lost, right? So, we better have that. Big water often means transient fish, right? So, we have big open water. Big open water often leads to pelagic fish, ciscos, herring, all kinds of different stuff, right? So you often have open water fish, and you have fish that are, you know, on structure, on cover, and then you have fish that solely live in open water. So when I deal with big water, the first thing that I do, I have to make a decision. What am I going to attack? Right? You cannot do it all. You can't do it all in, you can't do it all in a year, much less a trip or a weekend or a season. Right? So we need to choose to do something very well instead of everything half-assed, right? So big water demands that a decision be made. And now, at a certain point, can you become competent at all of it and competently do it? Yes, but at a starting point, if I'm facing big water or a new big body of water, I am going to commit to either trolling or casting, period. That's it, right? Okay, that's a means of A, trying to catch a fish, and B, learning something very well, right? So you can't come in, I'm going to throw at the edges a little bit, and then we're going to troll, and then I'm going to come in, blah, 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 right? Commit to trying to catch a fish and commit to learning it. So the onus, the emphasis in my brain is, well, the fish is a bonus to me learning what this looks like in edges, right? So what I have to do, and it's like anybody facing big water has to do, is you got to get the first piece of feedback, right? Getting that can be difficult because if we have big water, low density, high level of complexity and vastness, all, you know, all this thing, all the things you listed, which are difficult. Now getting that initial feedback's hard. So what I'm going to do is dial in again. Structurally, I'm going to look for the most obvious, ridiculous, there's no way a muskie can't be here stuff. Right? So it comes down to the hierarchy. Let's say there are multiple reef systems. I'm sure there are. I know there are. There's multiple reef systems. And I'm going to compare multiple reef systems. I'm going to go, what reef is head and shoulders above the other ones that I have access to? What is the best of these on paper? Well, how do we determine that? What is probably the biggest would be the first thing I'm looking at. So is this large and in charge? Is there a lot of surf? Is there a lot of area that's raised up, a lot of reef area? Okay, that's a benefit. Is it adjacent to some of the deepest water in the basin? We know, if we know structure fishing, that muskies use deep water most of the day, right? We've admitted that. We've gone, they move in, they move out. They move in, they move out. They just don't park their butts in the weeds and go, I live in the weeds now. Right? They're conserving calories. Their whole existence is a conservation of calories. So where is the best reef? Do we have a bigger reef than the others? Check. I'm looking at that. And then the next one is comparing, okay, does this reef have access to deep water, which is a relative term, or does another one? So you might have the second biggest reef. Oh, that's closer to the deeper water. Right? So I'm going to look at the size and the complexity, and then I'm going to look at its relative distance to deep water refuge, right? That's the first ones I'm looking at. Then on the water, I'm going to, again, three-point bait check. I'm going to look at that reef complex or multiple reef complexes and go, okay, what's the food density? What is the bait fish density on any of these reefs at any given time, right? Then I'm going to do the same thing with bars. Then I'm going to do the same thing with the littoral zone edges and things of that nature. So you've got to have a game plan on how you're going to break this stuff down. And when you're faced with a ton of water, big, big, big water, you've got to do that mapping homework first and foremost and be confident in doing it. Now, the first time you do it, are you going to be confident? No. But if you go with a game plan, and I don't mean a game plan, I'm going to fish these spots. You do the paperwork, right? You do the hard stuff that nobody wants to do, and you at least know what you're getting into. It's super important, right? So I have had multiple occasions where, you know, I'm again, and I'm talking about conceptualization. I'm conceptualizing what this place really looks like on a map before I ever see it with my own two eyes. And conceptually, I can kind of break some of this stuff down and make myself a list, a hierarchy of good, bad, and ugly. And I at least have some kind of idea of what I'm looking at, opposed to going, okay, there's, you know, 10 reefs in a 10-mile radius, and I'm going to just randomly run through them. You've got to logically break it down. I'm not just fixating on reefs. Also, points, bars, humps, the weed edges, or littoral zone, or just hard edges, or drop-offs. You've got to break that map down of the area you intend to fish. And on big water, you can't do it all in one day, so pick an area, right? I would pick an area that you have. If there's local knowledge that is being shared, well, I hear people catch fish in this area. Now we break that area down. And you make a list and you name them, whether they have, and this is overarching, whether it's here or whether it's anywhere. Name some stuff, right? You can be real boring and go, this is reef A, B, C, D, hump A, B, C, D, however you do it. Don't care. Logically lay these things out. You know, make notes, compare notes, look at it, look at where the wind basically comes from it all the time, and break this thing down so you have a plan. Then you look for the corollaries between these things. Right? Because Danny, he just said in his thing, well, there's a good rock bite, right? On Eagle right now. He's a good rock bite. Well, if you don't know Eagle, you don't know where any rocks are, and Danny knows where 1,000 of them are. So he knows there's a good rock bite, but you're a weed bed fisherman, and it's your first time there, you don't know where a single rock is. You're out of the game. Right? Opposed to, if you did your homework and you go, well, that looks like, you know, there's a reef there, or there's this, that, or the other, or there's this, you know, rock pile, or here's some hazards. Well, those should be probably be rocks, so now I know something. Do that homework. That's the part that nobody wants to do. And it's just like any other thing in life. Jay, you know this as well as anybody. Everybody wants to do it, but nobody wants to do the work, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's everything. Everybody wants to be this, everybody wants to be that, but they end up watching TV and sitting on their ass, right? So do your homework. And this is fun homework. This is not, you know, third period algebra, right? You'll never have a calculator in your pocket. You better learn to do this in your head. Well, I have a calculator now. You skanky teacher, you. Got it right in my pocket. Don't need to do it in my head anymore. But this is fun homework. Break it down. The other thing is this, and I'm not knocking it. I've sat down with people and they're looking at a map. They go, oh, look at that. That looks good. Oh, look at that. Like, you're just kind of pointing in a map and, well, that should be good. I'm talking serious recon. Serious recon where you're, again, you're notating these things. You're making a list, right? You're going back one of your best friends for any lake. I don't care if it doesn't have a map or not. One of your best friends is Google Earth, right? Google Earth is ripping. Zoom in on this stuff, and if you can, if you're fortunate enough that the satellite went over and took the pictures here, you know, during the summer, you can actually see weed edges. You can see subsurface rocks. You can see all kinds of stuff, right? So,
yeah, it's true.
Right. Look at your top, or senior, your bathymetry map. Then look at Google Earth and you go, okay, well, this bay that I thought was good, right, Jay? Now, I've done this before. It's a great example of what I'm getting at. I look at bays. I'm looking at this. Okay, this is, there's a creek channel coming into this bay and this looks great. And this is a check. This is on my list, right? This should theoretically hold muskies. And then I look on Google Earth and I go, oh, there's no vegetative growth in that, in the shallow bay. Heh. All right. Take that off the list. Because I'm making a list of shallow bays that should have vegetation that fell in the littoral zone that would be kind of where I would go if I find a weed bed bite. Or I need a vegetative zone. Well, freaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if I need a freaking, there's nothing there other than shallow water in a creek, that might be good at another time. But if I'm going in the summer and I'm looking for weed edge bites, rock bites, you know what I'm saying? I can take that off the list. So that's what I'm using Google Maps for. So use your real map, then use Google Maps, right? And break this stuff down. That's going to be monumental there. Realistically, when you're dealing with a body of water that is that big, you have to be methodical. There is no, well, let's try this hump. I mean, you've got too many moving pieces. There's too many things going on because we have not even talked about climactic influence yet. So we're just talking about structure study, right? Checking it on Google Maps and making a list. Now, we're going to conceptualize how the weather plays. with the structure that we've identified. Right? So if the wind's blowing out of this direction or that direction, how does that interplay take place? What could possibly happen? Right? So that's another factor, which is that in the moment factor. That's why I recommend, at least as a starter, identify this stuff, do your mapping homework, do your Google Earth homework. Then and only then, when you're on the water, can you go, oh, okay, I looked at this point, and today that I'm on the water, the wind is blowing off of it, right? It's blowing away from this point. Maybe I should go to point C instead of this point that's point B, because most likely bait fish will be blown into the other point versus this point. See what I'm doing? All right. So if you don't have lake knowledge or you're struggling with lake knowledge, create your own by making this breakdown, doing your homework, and then use your on the water in the moment thought processes, because you've looked at this stuff and you know it well enough where you can go, oh, that's to the east, that's to the west, that's to the, see where I'm going here? You can at least,
it boils down to, you know, like random contour, random good looking contour isn't often going to be a prime area.
Nothing's random.
Because it's not checking enough boxes.
Right. And now there's a ton of secrets and a ton of hidden little stuff on most lakes, right? That's not what we're going for. Mm-hmm. This is not how you find spot on spot, like, oh, there's that one rock that always produces. This is how you get to the place where you can find that. And you have to start somewhere, which is this methodology and breaking it down in list form. And again, I'll reiterate the point. A place like Georgian Bay or anything, don't try to tackle it all. You can't do it. It's the same thing. I said it before. You can cast or troll or jig, or, you know, you can try everything and keep throwing the ball, going crazy at it. Or you can break it down, be methodical in the same manner, picking what area, how far are you willing to run for real? And setting, you don't have to have a hard guideline, but set something realistic, right? I'm going to go out and, let's say, I don't care where you're going, and this is not directed towards him, but anybody, you're going on a trip and you're excited to fish it, and are you really going to fish 40 miles? What's the point?
Yeah, because you're thinking needle in a haystack. And it might be needle in a haystack on Georgian Bay, you know, but you can't think that way.
But let's say you're on whatever, you're on Trout Lake. Are you going to run, I can't remember how big Trout's been for eons, but whatever. Winnebago. You going to fish the whole thing? You know, you going to fish all Lock Sewell? Be realistic and kind of pick an area and know that area really well instead of trying to run the whole thing. That's how I operate. It served me well, where you start getting that feedback and you learn a little bit more and you learn a little bit more and you learn a little bit more. Get good where you're at and don't try to do everything at once. And that's kind of the hard thing of big water, is it forces you. You're like, oh God, they could be anywhere, blah, blah, blah. You got to kind of set parameters that are realistic and go, okay, this is the area I'm fishing. I'm going to figure it out here. And I've done it before. That's how I break down a lot of new water. I've done it a million times where, okay, well, I'm committing to this side of this lake and I'm going to figure it out over here. Especially on bodies of water that don't have a lot of intel, right? There's not a lot of people to call and pick up some hot information. Mm-hmm. You got to figure it out myself. Okay, cool. I'm fishing this end and let's see how she pans out. So that's a tough thing. Obviously, back to his question, I've been talking a lot of gross generality. You know, a body of water like that as well, with Georgian Bay being, you could grind all season for the bite. You're not looking for bites. You're looking for the bite. I would... I would encourage you, definitely in a scenario like that, do not hesitate to talk to a guide, right? Because that is so vast, you know. And I say that, and not often that I say, you should get a guide. I mean, you can definitely learn it, and but you might do yourself a big favor to at least go hire a guide and go, okay, what is at least the prime area where I should focus on? Because you can also be miles from muskies. That's the other thing, right? Because of low population density, that's one thing of like, you're not going to see me run out and go, I'm going to catch one on Lake Erie today, right? That's the thing. Or, hey, you don't hear a lot about Lake Superior muskies very often, Jay. They're there.
Yeah, not Main Lake, no.
No. I mean, I know guys that catch them.
Mm-hmm.
They're not musky guys, but I know guys that catch them, and they catch them every year. But, you know, so be realistic about it. Try to get some local knowledge via either, you know, a good angler there or a guide that can help you at least narrow that search. It's still going to be a big search area, so everything I'm saying still plays. But narrow down the search area to ensure that they're okay. The chance of success is definitely there. And then kind of break it down methodically. Matt, another Matt. Hey, guys, love the podcast. Meow. Jay, obligatory. Meow. Meow. Sad meow. He says it wasn't an accident this time. Anyhow, I'm going to Lake of the Woods at the end of the month for a week. This is the third year in a row. We stayed about an hour south of Kenora. I have yet to catch a muskie. Lots of pike. In the first year, my dad got a three-footer. I'm in the wrong places or what? Mostly throw rubber glide baits. I'm not really a bucktail guy. Any tips would be appreciated. Okay, so lots of muskies in Lake of the Woods. That's for sure, right? So it could be a location thing. Again, everything we just said in the last question. Do that. Break it down. It's the same thing, right? It's the same thing. Break it down.
And it's a lot easier to get a lot more information from a lot more good anglers too, right? on that. Yeah.
The number one, you know, again, this is, we fired up now for until the fall with your local reports, right? So you got Josh Krieger's doing the Northwoods, and you've got Danny and Joe Cooper doing Canada. So those are like in the moment of the moment. This is what's mm-hmm. working. Joe Cooper is on Lake of the Woods. So yep. If you don't know this, they are populated on the app, right? So you open your Muskie 360 app and it says Canada Muskie Podcast or Northwoods Muskie Podcast. They're shorter. They're not, I mean, they're entertaining, but they're not Jay. Let me put it that way. they ain't us, baby. these are some wannabe hacks, Jay. What's the deal with these guys?
Danny boy.
Everybody's a hack and everybody's got a podcast now. Oy vey. Long story
short. I'm starting my own podcast next week, did I tell you?
Yes.
I'm going solo.
Going solo. That'd be amazing. Okay. 45 minutes of JSE saying,
No, I'm just going to be talking about, Sasquatch sightings in the Northwoods. Stuff like that, basically.
We should start a spinoff.
I know.
Of just Jay Sasquatch of interest. Anyway, Joe Cooper is a guide on Lake of the Woods, and he's given up the ghost there every week. That would be helpful. Do your map study. You can't argue. I mean, Lake of the Woods is a shallow water fishery. That's one thing to consider. So if you're not a Blades guy, definitely a spinner bait, right? And, you know, at a baseline on a place like Lake of the Woods in July, rocks and weeds, right? Make sure you're figure eighting with that tannic water. You're not going to see every fish that's coming in. And everything else plays. Everything I just said to the other dude is the same deal, right? And there's tons of good information on Lake of the Woods. So give that a go. You will get them. Jay Spinoff Podcast. I can't. Freaking son of a he's cutting loose, folks.
Going solo.
Somebody got a big. You got a big head now. That's what happens. Jay thinks he's a person now.
That happens to everybody, you know.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch. And Chris, last episode, he had a question about when to go back on a fish that had followed and suggested going back on moon phase, weather change, etc. Now, let's say you're severely sore mouthed. When do you go back? 1 hour, one day, or say screw it and come back next year?
we covered a lot of that on that last week.
Well, when it comes to the sore mouth, dude, here's the deal. I've seen it. These are those outlier experiences. I have seen one sore mouthed fish, literally, client freaking hits this thing, boom, sets the hook. We fight it halfway in, it's head shaking. The guy, it gets off, and then it gets on the next cast. Okay, so that can happen. I've seen it once. I think the thing had a brain injury. Not very often does that happen. Right, I would bet some fib caught it an hour before and like threw it in the Gunnovy's boat and it was just all brain damage. Like now it's would just hit anything. Now it's very uncommon, right? Very uncommon to sore mouth one, much less he said severely. I've caught them very rarely where I've had them nip like their beak hooked for just an instant, and by instant I mean right? That's about how long he's on. Then I can probably still get him. Because there wasn't any like serious hook penetration. He probably thought it was a little bluegill spine or something. I'm just saying. But I would probably move on. I mean, if you really had him on and he's going nutty, and there's different schools of thoughts and there's fish will do different stuff. Sometimes they just go right back to just where they were and sometimes they take out of there. But your chances are going to be low on just picking him up. Jason, I'm in the market for a headlock or a matlock. If you could have only one, which would you go with? 10 or 12, which color? Most for fishing northern Minnesota the first week in August. Clear water, blah, 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 blah. Here's what I would do. I can tell you immediately. And your Minnesota guys, you're always going to hear 12, right? Most of everybody that I know that catches a ton of fish runs 10s. Most of all the guys I know that catch a lot of fish on those run 10s, right? And you can, I would go, he's saying headlock versus matlock, I'm going to go headlock, right?
As an all-purpose.
Right. So your matlock, not only is it a thrilling daytime drama, it is also a fatter bait, right? So the width of that bait causes it to work better at slow speed. So if we're fishing summer or fishing fall, I'm going to go with the headlock. 10 inches, clear water, something Cisco-ish, right? And, I mean, I run two. I run, well, I shouldn't say two. I run something that looks kind of Cisco-y, bait fishy, right? Silver flashy. And I run the Steve's Musky Thunder that Duff made, which is black with a little lightning bolt. And take it, if you took me down to, I could only have one, I'm just going to get the black one. The whole reason we did that, we have the custom car at Musky Shop. I believe, I know at the time, I don't know if they've done anything else now, that is the only headlock you can get your hands on, or matlock, but it's the only headlock you can get your hands on that's just all black. And we basically put the lightning bolt from like a Gibson guitar strap on the side to make it look rad, bro. Right? So, that was kind of the thing. So, when in doubt, go with black. That's kind of always my thought process. Clear water, dark water, turbid water, black always works. So, that is kind of like a, well, can't go wrong with that. It's black. It's got a little bit of flash. Whatever. Now, something to throw out for folks when you're thinking about trolling baits. So, generally, the fish are coming off of structure, floating up behind these things after they go by them, right? I like the black or the flashy stuff, again, for super bright stuff, but I like the all black because if you think about how a fish is looking at that bait, it's from behind. He's just seeing the thing wag back and forth. He might get to check out the paint job for a millisecond when he recoils and smashes into the side of it. Right, he might go like, "Oh, great paint!" Right as his mouth closes. So, just a thought. Just throwing it out there. So
yeah, the old silhouette thing, you know, that's that's been an age old, you know, dramatized kind of thing. You know,
it's well, a hell of a drama.
Thing, you know, was there when in doubt, throw black.
Was there a local play about it, Jay?
No, not.
Did
not
the Minocqua players do a thing called Musky Silhouettes?
No.
Okay, you said it's dramatized. I thought it was funny.
Can
we work on this?
Talk about that. Yeah, just like a little bit too much.
Yeah,
you know,
people
in my opinion. You know, but you know the whole thing about looking up, and if a black bait, when it boils down to you know the surface bait thing over the years too, you know, with just like how many people are running black surface baits, or you know, 90% black at least.
Yeah,
the silhouette, you know, it shows up better. Yep. So, and there's probably some truth to that. You know, anyone that's taken a camera and looked up at baits on a daylight situation, you know, yeah, they're going to show up a little bit better. So, and like you said, you know, trolling baits, they're going over the fish and they're looking at it as it goes by and they're looking up at it from behind.
Yep.
So the side of the bait doesn't have a whole lot of impact in terms of how pretty the paint is, but.
The other thing, and I mean, the other thing is this: when in doubt, buy something you like. If you, and I've done this before, and it's just we're all sensitive people here, Jay. I have picked up bargain basement baits or used. You know, I'm notoriously stealing the returns at the shop. You know,
yeah, right.
And I'll get something. I'm like, nah. And it's just ugly.
And I but occasionally.
Well, I'm saying color selection. I get great baits, but I'm just going like, if you're not into the bait, you're not going to fish it. So that's one thing. It's just true. It just, you know.
Yeah, right. It probably is.
I mean, am I going to be like, oh yeah, I really want to throw this Wonder Bread swim bait? No. Played out. I'm just like, nah. So buy something you like first and foremost. I mean, you know, again, don't overthink it, but just go, I feel good about that. And that's important because, I mean, having confidence in A, the lure itself, much less the paint job, right? Now, on the other hand, is the whole, I paid $80 for Rainbow Butt Monkey finish. I mean, that's a little ridiculous, but. You know, get something you feel confident in, especially when you're trying to pattern stuff out. Jay!
Steve.
Not you. The guy. I didn't know there were more. Ugh. There's more than one of you on the planet. Ugh.
Yeah, there is. Probably.
Ugh. That made me feel
itchy. So Jay's got a question?
Jay says, I had a question regarding trolling. This is a tactic I've been employing quite a bit with excellent returns, but I've noticed, and perhaps it's just bad luck, the fish I'm catching trolling are almost always hooked badly, i.e. gill plates, under the chin, back, side gouges from hooks, etc., making each release a bit of a nail biter. I was wondering if this was simply something inherent to trolling, purely chance. Is there a controllable variable that could be better for fish? Love the podcast. Love the book. Love that. Thank you. He gushes there at the bottom. We appreciate you listening. We're always trying to help. So hookups, trolling, and it's kind of this deal. It depends on your baits, but we're just talking about supernatural big baits, or you're talking about a freaking 13-inch grandma. A lot of hook. Right? I personally think most of your baits are overhooked. Now that sounds like, well, old man conservation. Oh, let me come shit on your fun, kids. You got too many hooks, Jay. But I have seen some gnarly hookups and some really bad stuff with like 8-inch Jakes and grandmas and stuff. Right? You've got 3-4 miles an hour, you got 9 treble hooks going. Ugh. It depends also too where you're fishing. I mean, you can identify, obviously he's catching a lot of fish trolling now. So let's say pick your bait, whatever it is, but let's just pretend for argument's sake it's the Spanky M9, right? 9-inch crankbait, 3 treble hooks, triple X treble hooks, I believe, on those, right? They're very strong. I think it's like a VMC or something, but they've got three really strong treble hooks. So, let's say that you're continually getting the head shot, and then the back hook and the middle hook seems to be tagged up on the fish pretty bad, right? And you're like, man, they're doing this, and then I've taken out eyeballs, guys. I'm sorry. It just happens, right? Where it's just like, oh, man, that thing whipped up and got them in the eye or did this or did too much damage.
Sure. Yeah, I've seen that.
It is what it is, boys.
Yeah.
You know?
High-speed trolling. I mean, if a bait's going 4 miles an hour, it's swinging wildly quickly. Yeah.
Whackety-schmackety. Yeah. So
accidents will happen.
What you can do, and I've done it different times, is remove hooks that are unnecessary that you're not seeing the eat on, right?
Mm.
I don't really recall the last time I had a fish hooked on the middle hook of a trolling bait.
Okay.
I have not. I don't recall. Because I get so annoyed cutting hooks, right? A lot of my trolling baits, I will literally weigh the hook. Let's say the hook is X, Y, and Z, grams, whatever, right? You get your little postal scale, Jay. I assume most of our users, listeners here, own a postal scale because of postage stamps, right?
A lot of them do.
That sure. They don't want to not get enough postage on their letter to grandma.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So get out your postal scale that you keep in your car for some reason and weigh the hooks that you intend to remove, and then get a bell sinker that is of equal or lesser weight. Not lesser, but try to get as close as you can, right? And if it's a tick over, you can't get it right on, take you a little whatever, shave it down, and get it as close as you can. So that will not influence your action of the bait. Running depth, everything will stay the same to some extent, but that is going to keep the bait balanced where it should be. The other thing I've done is I've just straight up quickly on the boat a ton of times. If it's just kind of in the moment, like say I catch one, I go, oh man, ugh. And I know I'm dialed on, say, like, whatever, Livingston bulldozers or Jake or whatever. Just cut some points on some hooks too. Doesn't matter. Because if you think about it, so if a fish hits a 9-inch bait moving at 4 miles an hour in the middle, how quickly, if there wasn't a hook in the middle, how quickly is that second hook in his face? Right? Dr. Bob, if he was here, he could tell us, and it's going to be infinitesimal amount of time. Right? So, we've got him. How quickly, you see what I'm saying? You're advancing at 4 miles an hour, and now we need to hit the next hook points, we need to go 5 inches at 4 miles an hour. How quick does that happen? Pretty quick. You're not going to miss him, right? It's the old adage with lures, the more hooks, the more you sell. You don't see companies taking hooks off. You just don't. You don't see people going, oh, let's put less hooks on for conservation. And again, I'm not trying to be Mr. Conservation from a hook standpoint. I am just like annoyed by it, and I want to do as little damage as possible. So, you know, can you get away with removing one hook? A, it makes it easier in the net. Possibly. That'll help you. The other concern is this. With fish getting banged up on the troll, I've seen a lot of fish do that weird hooked under the head thing over the years. I don't know how that happens per se, but it happens, right? It is what it is. That's goofy. The only other thing I'd say that you can do yourself a favor, is make sure you're using like that musky shop, like the 36 inch long leader. That will help you out too. If you're not using a long leader, I recommend it, but you're going to hook them, and you're going to hook them funky. It's not all the time. And I've been on lakes where they just come in clean, like, oh, pristine eats every time, and they hit it perfectly. And then there's other times where it's just like pulling them in every which way but loose on trolling baits. But just think about what you can do. Look at your hooks. Look at that configuration. Can I sacrifice my middle hook? You know, because a lot of times if they hit the head of the bait, which they do most of the time for me, I've got them on the front hook, and okay, I've got two hooks on there, and that middle hook's out of there, and usually the middle hook's the one that'll swing up and screw up their gill plate or get right close to their eyeball. So I don't like the middle hook on trolling baits if I can avoid it. But anyway, that would be the nickel thought on that. Jay, what's your thought? More hooks? Add more hooks? What do you think?
Never more hooks. You know, bait with three treble hooks? Yeah, and you can always take off the middle one and just go up a size or two. You know, yeah, if you're concerned with the hooking power of that particular bait, but
yeah,
usually with trolling, you get nippers or you know, on the rear hook, or you get, you know, headshots and
yeah,
my head fish shooting. So yeah,
I seem to err on the side of headshots. I mean, it's rare that you get that rear hook, but anyway,
well,
you know,
there's a lot of baits too, Steve, if you think about it, that the hooks are not spaced far apart at all. I'm not talking about 12-inch trolling baits. It's mm-hmm. just like, well, there's a bait that, you know, almost you could keep all three hooks because, you know, the distance between each hook gap is quite a bit, and there's right no way they'll tangle. But if you take a bait, a crankbait in particular, and you put the hooks together and they almost overlap,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of an issue.
It's kind of overkill-y.
Yeah, it's kind of overkill-y.
You know, and it is what it is. I mean, yeah, again, from a sales standpoint, more hookies, more better.
You can always take them off.
You can always take them off. That's the thing. Most of your trolling baits, two hooks would be sufficient in general. But like I said, I mean, you know, cut the points or whatever you want to do there to kind of minimize it. You know, like I said, for me, if I'm patterning it, if I'm not going to do that on like a freaking 14-inch Jake, you know, no, because that's all. And I should say that, like, that's a really big bait. There's a lot of plastic there to slide. So you'd probably want to do that or minimize hooks. Anyway, Jay.
Yes, Steve.
I don't know. Say good something.
All right. Well, it's good talking to you, Steve, and appreciate everybody.
It's been every second has been hell.
Well, it's hot outside.
Every second. Later.
Bye-bye now. Let the muskies hit the floor. Let the muskies hit the floor. Let the muskies hit the floor.